Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty podcast, snap reactions, NFC, passing game, going wide receivers, tight ends, week 10. And we'll start with the Arizona Cardinals. And I think one of the key things with the Cardinals is when you look at, you know, I was checking out some of the splits with Christian Kirk with DeAndre Hopkins versus without this year. This is two games without DeAndre Hopkins. He's up two receptions per game. He's up a target and a half. He's basically gone 14 targets, 13 receptions through that time, 80 yards a game. Hasn't had any touchdowns, which has really held him back in those two games. When you look at his in splits, or the other split, I guess the other side of that split, which would be when Hopkins is playing, it's 13.2 points per game. It's 14.4 without Hopkins and without any touchdowns. So there's and probably some of that also is a little bit of positive variance. I would say I think the big number from that really is the target and a half jump. It goes up from 5.5 up to 7. Again, I still think you're probably a little high variance there in terms of on the good side of where you would expect him to be, I wouldn't read too much into that small sample size, because I think it's probably he's probably the beneficiary of some positive variance. The thing I'll say too is when you look at Zach Ertz, he's been fully involved since this trade. So again, he has played four games since then, but when you look, he had 99 routes in that time since he's been with Arizona. Rondale Moore has only had 81. And so Ertz is second on the team in routes since he's been with Arizona, a pretty good grade as well, and a 1.83 yards per route run. So good stuff there, good usage for him. I think tight end 1-2 slash turn, we'll look and see, you know, when Hopkins comes back, because I think the equation changes with him ultimately. All right, when you look, Kyle Pitts since week 7, so over the last over the last 4 weeks, 2.68 yards per route run. I don't think there's anyone of any real value in the receiving game that we could predict. I guess if I had to say, like, just go in over the last month or so, you look and it's really been Russell Gage, it's been Tajay Sharpe, but then a step down has been Olamide Zaccheaus as being the routes that you would look at. Zaccheaus, the best yards per route run guy, but I don't have very much confidence with any of them. I think it's a big takeaway. Pitts looks like a monster, and he's really coming on here over the past few games or so. All right, Carolina, and with the tight ends, again, it's Ian Thomas. You could do anything but Ian Thomas and you'd be fine. You look at the receivers, it's DJ Moore. On the season, DJ Moore is 1.9 yards per route run. So a good number there in terms of, especially when you look around, like, this is one of those things where you say, all right, like, he's good, but sort of what's everyone else doing? Well, everyone else is doing pretty darn bad. So Robbie Anderson, 0.68, Terrace Marshall, 0.64 yards per route run. So you look at those guys, and that's really the other people of any sort of volume. Targets so far in the season, 92. This is according to PFF, 92 for DJ Moore, 56 for Robbie Anderson, 25 for Terrace Marshall. And you just really get to a spot where you're, after that, there's not a particularly valuable aspect to this receiving game. So those are the big takeaways there. I mean, DJ Moore is basically becoming just a star, and he's essentially the new version of Allen Robinson. He is 17 points per game expected, and that's top 10 at the position. That's basically wide receiver 9 in terms of expected points. He's at wide receiver 22, but all the sort of indications to me, like, give me the expected points, and I think that's really where I want to be shooting for. And then especially where you get, they're underperforming that, like, that's a good that seems like there's a value opportunity if you're trying to make an acquisition here before the trade deadline. All right, turning next to the Chicago Bears. A ton really to say here other than Darnell Mooney's on basically the wide receiver three type lens. Like, we're just hoping for a better day from Allen Robinson. I'm of half a mind with him. It's, you know, and there was a question of, hey, what do we do like vis-a-vis Odell Beckham Jr. with Allen Robinson? Like, sort of who do we like? I was like, just give me the more variance. Like, just give me the higher variance outcome of the Odell Beckham Jr. Just because right now it feels like a capped upside situation on Allen Robinson. Could be totally wrong, but he could come out ahead, but it seems like there's just a wider range of outcomes. It changes a little bit on sort of the with the new quarterback, the new offense. There's just more chances, I think, for you to sort of get flexibility with that roster spot and that asset than there is Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson just feels like like you're stuck. You don't feel confident starting him. I can see a scenario where over the next month you feel confident starting Odell Beckham Jr., and heck, it could be as early as 2 weeks from now. The other one I think is interesting here is Cole Kmet. So on the season, Cole Kmet, 1.26 yards per route run. So that's one where you could say, all right, like that's, Jordan, that's not like super, super impressive. But in the context of what he's doing it, which is the best person on the team at 1.61, where it's an elevation up from 0.93 as a rookie. Everything else has grown basically too. So his receiving grade, for example, at PFF has gone from 51 to 68. He's running more routes. He's basically almost right now at last year's stat rate. We're halfway through the season. So again, you could be in a situation where you're basically doubling. Close to doubling. You could double and it wouldn't be entirely impossible here. And when you look at sort of this, you look at the stat, you're basically through nine games and you've got, you know, you're just short of, you're basically 4.5 targets per game. You sort of extrapolate that out. Like, that's okay. Like, it's, we're not getting all the way there yet, but we're on a pace for, you know, 60 or so targets. Like, we can build from that. That's a place where you could see a jump coming next year. And so all those things, like I'm cautiously optimistic. The thing I will say is zero touchdowns. So he's having a mini breakout, isn't the right word for it. Mini breakout's too aggressive of a term, but he is having some progression in his stats. Again, as a person who I think at last check, he was like my top two or three most owned, most rostered tight end. He's firmly in wide receiver three range of expected points. He's 6.3 in terms of actual points. When you look at expected points, he's more in the firmly in the tight end two range. So he's 18th in terms of expected points. So you could say, okay, like that's we're getting a wide receiver tight end two type of asset at a tight end three type of cost. It's tight end three type of perception. That's interesting in terms of if you're acquiring him. Guys in the same range as him, Freiermuth in terms of expectation, Jared Cook, Evan Ingram, Dawson Knox. Heck, he's got more expected points per game than Dallas Goedert does. So when you sort of look at that, you could say, all right, like, am I buying a pretty steep discount right now based on a little bit of touchdown variance? Possibly, you know, possibly. So I think he's an interesting one. I think my general rule would be if a tight end's going to make a difference, they're going to make a difference early. They're going to make a difference by now, and he hasn't. So that gives me some pause. But that's like, you could convince me. You could convince me to tilt my head and look and say, huh, that's certainly interesting. Over the last three games, 6, 6, and 8 targets. He had 5 before that. So again, it's more involvement. It's more involvement, and that's kind of what we want to see here. So I am cautiously optimistic, and maybe it's never a difference-making tight end one type production, but if it's sort of that tight end 1-2 tier, and then maybe he could be in the flex conversation in some of your premium leagues, I think that stuff's pretty interesting. So I know I spent a little bit more time on him because he's one that at least I do. And I would suspect, given the fact that I provide advice and that everyone here tends to listen in some way, shape, or form, that it would be a similar situation where you all have him rostered as well. All right, Dallas. And so this is a question that has always, I don't know if flummoxed me is the right word, but very much left me cautious. And that was CeeDee Lamb. And are we getting a CeeDee Lamb, the version of CeeDee Lamb that's going to be a wide receiver one or high end two in terms of percentage of routes run? Or are we going to get a wide receiver who's playing a ancillary role, who's being targeted a little bit more heavily, and maybe it is a, you know, maybe it's a, it's still this committee where Gallup is playing a ton of snaps and running a ton of routes, but maybe, you know, Lamb's seeing some a little bit more value, a little bit more volume. I didn't want to spend a really, really high price, a really, really high cost pick on that. What have we got? Well, Lamb has played really well. And so that's a certainly a good thing. Like, we're excited to see that. However, I have the same question we never truly got answered, which is Gallup gets hurt early and we don't really get the answer of, you know, where do we lie with this? And when you looked earlier on in the season, it did look, you know, and I think it was a game or two or so that Gallup played, and it was, yeah, he was still playing a lot, but Lamb was mixing in out a little bit as well. Sort of what is this, how is this whole thing going to look over the course of regular season? Well, now we kind of have a better idea. We're getting some more data. So week 10, the first week Gallup's back, 33 routes for Cooper, 22 for Lamb, 21 for Gallup. Don't love that. Don't love that at all. So again, now it gets back to 70% of the snaps for Lamb are in the slot. That's not what we love. And we're seeing 87% out wide for Gallup. And again, that was always my question of, you know, if this is going to be the situation where we're going to see Gallup still playing a ton, are we still seeing him in, you know, in a situation where, like, he's taking up a lot of the oxygen which CeeDee Lamb would grow? It's a stark difference for me, because 80% of the snaps when in weeks 2 to 9, so Gallup got hurt in week 1, he was out weeks 2 to 9. During that week 2 to 9 span, CeeDee Lamb, 233 routes, leads the team. 80% of his routes, 79.3, are outside. So basically 20% are in the slot. Now all of a sudden, when you take it and you look at the routes when Gallup is there, it's a much different, right? It is a very, he comes in just ahead of Gallup in the two games a season. He has 69 routes compared to Gallup 58, but that's substantially behind Cooper, who was at 91. And that first game that they played was a huge volume. If you remember, that was the game against the Buccaneers. I think it was that might have been Thursday night, or it was a primetime game early on. But when you look at the split, it's basically 50-50. It gives me concern that with Gallup back now, he's much more back to the slot this past week. So we'll see there. I'm a little bit nervous, a little bit cautious of that. It's one of the reasons why I didn't like to make that super expensive bet at a really high level of uncertainty. I know there's a wide range of outcomes. I know he could be wide receiver one. At the same time, he could be a wide receiver three. And like that, there's a lot of uncertainty there. It's just not a bet that I love to make. He's wide receiver 17, CeeDee Lamb is, in terms of expected points. Again, he's outproducing that, so that's good. But you just have to always be, you know, always be a little bit careful, a little bit cautious there in terms of making that high-end investment. At the same time, Amari Cooper is wide receiver 28 in terms of expectation, which is basically a point and a half, 1.7 points behind where CeeDee Lamb is expected. And CeeDee Lamb is producing basically 3 points better, actually. So he's basically twice, essentially, he's twice as much over expectation as Cooper is. So some variance there to play with. We'll see going forward. I'm a little nervous about the workload of CeeDee Lamb would be the big thing. The other thing I would say is Dalton Schultz. I think Dalton Schultz is really interesting from a long-term perspective of, is he going to be a tight end 1-2 type range? He's certainly playing well enough to warrant that. 1.68 yards per route run, which is really good. And when you look at the position, at the tight end position, that is a, for a guy that was largely dumped on because he's just, oh, Blake Jarwin's better. I still find it amazing that that was just the accepted truth. So when you look at his yards per route run, he is at C16th. So to give you an idea, there's other guys in that range. And actually, I need to cancel. My minimums aren't set right here. Let me rejigger that number here. He's actually 12th, excuse me, of guys that have basically about 20 targets or more is basically the number. 17, I think, is the actual qualifying number. But Jonnu Smith, Harrison Bryant is in that range, which is an interesting name. He's ahead of Darren Waller. Dan Arnold, top 10 guy. Kelsey's 9th. So in a favorable set of guys, and honestly, of those people mentioned, probably in the most crowded offensive system. So really good on Dalton Schultz for being a performer this year. I like what I have seen so far. And again, if he's available as like a tight end 2 type cost, I'm officially interested. All right. So next one up is TJ Hockenson. And, you know, I texted Carlo the other day and I was like, just give me a Hockenson take. And it was really interesting because I had some thoughts on sort of the direction he was going. And Carlo's take was really good, which was, I think he's proving that he can't be basically the lead option in a passing game, which is kind of where my inclination was. You see this team get bogged down a little bit. It's kind of like when Kenny Galladay leads the passing game. You get bogged down a little bit, it becomes a problem. I wonder now, like with some of the stats, it's interesting because the start to the season, which is where Hockenson was really, I think we, you know, heck, Chad and I had a show in which we talked about how he deserved credit. He deserved the thought of, you know, in the discussion of being tight end one, right? Coming off the heels of that, the first 5 weeks of the season, he's tight end 7, basically at about 60 points. So you're looking 12 points per game, just straight PPR. Obviously, more than that in your premium formats. When you take it out and you look at the right, so 7. So when you take it out and you look at the next 5 weeks, he's tight end 11. However, he doesn't have any touchdowns. So when you say, okay, well, what's going on? Well, actually, what's going on is really interesting. In that first 5 weeks, 1.26 yards per route run. And in there, he's got a PFF grade of 68.7. When you look at the next 5 weeks, so that's weeks 6 through 10, he does kick in a bye in there as well. Similar numbers in terms of targets, in terms of receptions. The yards per route run is up to 1.67, so big time growth there, and a jump in his PFF grade. The difference? No touchdowns. So I think he's a smash buy, would sort of be my thought. And I don't know if he necessarily has where Mark Andrews is right now, is tight end 2. Like, I don't know if that's in his range of outcomes, but I think certainly dead smack middle of the tight end 1 range is certainly within his range of outcomes. And if you were to say, hey, what's more likely, I think it's more likely that he's a top 3 finisher than he is a 13th or worse. And so that's the thing with him that I actually hold out a little hope for. And you just saw them, like you've seen them lay eggs recently. And so this could be a situation where there's a buy opportunity. So I am making a play and making a pivot to buy. You know, there's guys at the position we'll talk about. Like, I'm making a pivot from Higbee up, right? I'll do that type of deal for sure. Freiermuth up, right? Constantly doing those. Hunter Henry up the position, right? I think that makes a lot of sense. Zach Ertz plus, right? Sort of make that pivot up the position. I really like that. That's something I'm going to probably be trying to do this week. Okay, Green Bay, it's basically, I think the answer to all of your questions is it's Devontae Adams. That's pretty much it. It's Devontae Adams. No, it's more specific than that, I guess. Randall Cobb is basically the two in routes over the last like month, but again, you've had injuries and stuff. I don't really trust it. It's actually not horrible in terms of yards per route run over the season at 1.28. I struggled a little bit more recently, but that kind of matches with some struggle in the play. Skill. The other, I think, big question is like, hey, what's the tight end situation going to look like in terms of yards or in terms of routes over the time of the non-Robert Tonyan tenure, I guess is what we'll call it in Green Bay. You know, what's the post-Robert Tonyan world going to look like? Well, it's Josiah DeGuara, 22 snaps, 1.14 yards per route run. Excuse me, 22 routes, 1.14 yards per route run. 19 for Mercedes Lewis, 8 for Dominique Daphne, 4 for Tyler Davis. Not a ton of confidence in any of those guys at present. All right, next up with the Rams, and we're talking the post-Robert Woods world. What's the offense look like? Well, on Monday Night Football, 43 routes for Tyler Higbee, 43 routes for Van Jefferson, 42 routes for Cooper Kupp, 33 for Ben Skowronek, 11 for Odell Beckham Jr., and then 1 for Kendall Blanton, the tight end. I think the easiest thing to say here is that this doesn't reflect what Odell Beckham Jr.'s workload is going to be. That's certainly not fair to him, because they got terrible time, game script, time, pressures and all that stuff. They had to go hurry up, trying to get back in it. McVay still refuses to go for it, even when, like, you're going to lose. And I was telling the story in the group me chat, and it was about we were talking about that, one of those trials, I think it was the one in Wisconsin or something like that, and it was the prosecutor and the judge, and, you know, basically, like, you know, sort of how do you handle it, and it's like you just kind of have to take the beating, whatever. I said, you know, like, if you're going to lose, like, you might as well, like, you have nothing left to lose. And so it's one of those things, like, you take some risks. Like, I'm if I'm going to lose, like, go ahead and might as well lose. And, if I'm going to lose, like, there's no sense in worrying about losing. Might as well try and give it a shot to win. And McVay just doesn't do that sometimes. Like, you just, like, go. Like, all right, fine. You're down 3 scores on your own 30-yard line. Like, there's 17 minutes left in the game. You got to score 3 times and you haven't stopped him at all. Like, you got to go. But be that as it may, I get why Beckham didn't really get the opportunity to do it, just because, like, they were, the communication, everything just wasn't there. Totally get that. 1.64 yards per route run. He runs 11 routes, 18 yards. Again, it's not anything that's going to get a ton of, it's not world-breaking by any means, but an initial showing that is good. Van Jefferson couldn't catch anything is kind of what the feeling is. So I could make a joke, but I won't. He just isn't catching the ball well, and it's just struggling to do that, which is really holding them back. Couple of key drops, over the past couple weeks, just on my own watching of it. And then, they PFF has him graded for two drops. Higbee for two drops as well. They both dropped, like, if memory serves, they're both first round or first downs. They and I think Van Jefferson might have dropped two of those. I know Higbee dropped one, and I know they both dropped one, but I'm pretty sure Van Jefferson dropped two, what would have been first down. So being held back there, but I think this is going to be an interesting development here with how this offense looks in the post Woods world. I'm pretty optimistic. I wouldn't worry about Monday night too much. Okay, Minnesota, and Justin Jefferson's just a robust producer, is I think the easiest way to say it. The other, and when you sort of look at him, like, he's up at the top end of the position in terms of yards per route run, all that stuff. Like, he's got a good PFF grade. It's all pretty much checking out. He's, of course, lagging behind Adam Thielen, but everyone lags behind Adam Thielen in touchdowns, so not super worried about that. He lines up inside, he lines up outside, 2.29 yards per route run. It's all checking out. Like, so it's all good there in terms of his production. I think the name that, you know, again, Thielen's fine, but it's more, I think he's producing over expectation right now. So with Thielen, you look at him and it's 13.4 expected points. That would put him on the wide receiver three radar, 27th in terms of expected points. So good. When you sort of look at his actual production, on the other hand, Mr. Positive Touchdown Variance himself performs as wide receiver 15. So you're definitely seeing, an overproduction there in terms of that. He's expected for 4.6 touchdowns. So again, that's actually a healthy number too. So that's not, we're not totally coming from like zero when he's got seven touchdowns, but 4.6 touchdowns and he's got seven. So that's like an overproduction. However, when you sort of look at where he would be in terms of touchdown productions, it's at wide receiver 16. So 4.6 touchdowns is at wide receiver 16. So again, that's pretty good, but an overproduction for sure. The two wide receivers we kind of know we're going to get. I think the interesting thing is Tyler Conklin. I did mention him. He's in the midst of a breakout, and I think it's probably he's going to be interesting. Like, is this year's Dalton Schultz, of a guy that we weren't expecting a ton from coming into the season. He comes in and is out produces, and he's a beneficiary of injuries. And then we sort of are going to go into the off season, and it's going to be the guy that everyone thought was better come again, which was Irv Smith. And he's going to come back into the fold, and we're going to be like, huh, what do we do? And I'm going to be really interested to see what happens in that one. There's a better argument for Irv Smith to be valuable. Pedigree, all of that stuff, like, sure. That said, like, when you go base rates versus density, you're going to put, assuming we get a hit out of Conklin, which I think we might. I think we will. He's at wide receiver 11 right now. I think he has a decent chance to go up or stay there. Like, he's going to be right on the line. It's going to be close. Like, that's a tight end, like, 18. I would say tight end 17 to tight end 8 is separated by 20 points. So there's a lot of movement in there. But almost independent of where he specifically ends up, Conklin is going to be on a very positive track of like, hey, that's a good range for him, right? That tight end 1-2 range, like, he's proven that he can be there. That's a good range for him. Where does he go versus Irv Smith, I think, is going to be a fascinating thing, a la Dalton Schultz this year. So really positive stuff from Conklin too. Like, when you look, a big jump in a couple of things. So big jump in PFF grade for sure, up from 54.5 up to 69.7. It's notable. He's already basically doubled up his targets from last year. He's at 25 last year. He's at 47 this year. He's almost doubled up his receptions. He was at 19 last year. He's up to 35. He's literally doubled his, basically almost doubled his receptions each year, and should hopefully far surpass, assuming health, should far surpass his reception total from last year. So good on that. Yards per route run, like smashing success in terms of where he's at, up from 0.92 up to 1.41. So that's really good as well. So yeah, he's a really, and it's interesting, like he's one of those guys I actually liked when he was coming out. I like some of the tape and stuff watching him coming out of college. I want to do more of like, especially given the way we play tight end premium, I want to do like a running back roundup, sort of tight end centric edition. And basically we go, hey, let's just go back a couple years, just guys that we liked in the draft that haven't really done much. Like in a couple years, it'll be like Noah Gray, right? It'll be sort of that. And I think it'll be a really useful and productive thing to do like a couple of times a year in the offseason, just to like to think about these tight ends, because guys like Conklin, like this is a pattern that we see. It takes some time to develop, injuries sort of happen, all that stuff. Like you do get some opportunity there. And I think Conklin's a really interesting, again, we just look at archetypes, the prototypes, like Conklin, Schultz, like these guys that come out and they, takes a little bit of time to be productive, but we kind of like them, you know, sort of monitoring them, sort of how they produce. I think that's another interesting profile to watch for. Okay, next up is, speaking of underproducing tight ends that we're waiting for some development on, Adam Trautman. The only concern that I have like with Adam Trautman is he hasn't taken quite a jump yet. So he's actually down in terms of PFF grade across the board. He is down in yards per route run. Like he's just basically down. And I thought coming in, he had a good shot of being a riser. There wasn't a ton in his way, like a super homeless man's version of TJ Hockenson, in the sense of like, I didn't think there's a ton in his way. And maybe he could take a jump. He would have been probably the lowest percentage guy on my list of tight ends who could potentially lead their team and targets. Obviously we're not getting there yet. He would really need to amp it up to get there, but not getting there. Hopefully we get, you know, some development, maybe second half of the season, quarterback situation settles, all those things, but not the progression that we had hoped for. I think the interesting name here is Deonta Harris, one of the best graded PFF receivers. He's at a robust 3.26 yards per route run. However, only 34 targets thus far on the season, and that is through 8 games. So very highly graded, highly productive, very limited sample so far. The other thing I would say is like when you see that profile, you're like, oh, it's 28. It's actually 11.7. So I wonder if like there's a way that he can, and I don't know if it's just bimodal, right? If it's long, if it's short and long, I'm not sure on that. But it'd be really interesting to see some more from him, because he's really productive. So hoping to see them get him incorporated, more involved. He smashes the productivity of basically anyone else at this point. And yeah, that's pretty much it there. Again, they're rubbing sticks together, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes forward. Good luck, Trevor Siemian. We root for you. Okay, the Giants, and leading the team in routes is actually Evan Engram. So at 1.08, just haven't gotten the breakout yet. I find this team fascinating. They're in the teens in yards per attempt. Like they're worse than the median, but it's just incredible. Kenny Galladay, 1.74 yards per route run, 2.01 for Sterling Shepard, 2.44 for Kadarius Toney, 1.35 for Darius Slayton. When you're like, okay, like maybe that's where it is, but 1.77 for John Ross. Like you are getting some really productive stuff here from this team in terms of some of these guys. It's not put together ideally. Like you have had two skill position guys play all 9 games for them. That's Kyle Rudolph and Caden Smith. That just tells you how decimated they are, right? That those two guys, who if I had asked you who the third tight end on the Giants was, you probably wouldn't have known it, and we're highly educated football watchers. So that's the level of which we're dealing with. So, Ingram in, Ingram in free agency is what we have to root for. And then we'll sort of see how that unfolds, how that offense looks. I'm hopeful on Evan Ingram, but man, it's been a hard ride, and the expected points per game for him, again, he's right in that Cole Kmet range. He's at 8.0. Notably, he's actually overperforming it, which is fascinating and surprising. He's at 8.6, and he was at 8.0 expectation. So he is actually overproducing his expectation. He's got 2 touchdowns. He's expected at 0.7 so far on the season. So I think he's underproducing what we would hope for, but there's plenty of room for him to grow. Next up is the Eagles. When you look, Goddard is tied for the 3rd most targets through 9 games. Like, it's just not okay, honestly. Like, it's just, when you look, 2.15 yards per route run. I actually think I'm curious on a couple of fronts, because he's got 2.15 yards per route run. He's at 200, so 200 routes run, and then 2.15 yards per route run. So that's really good. Really good. His PFF grade, excellent. 87.7. So right up there amongst the elites of the position. They're just not using him enough. And so I'm of two minds. One is, this is a potential spot for he's going to be a free agent, so he could potentially be moving on. This could be a tag situation. We don't know how this offense is going to continue to look. I think with this production profile, he finds himself someplace else. But at the same time, I wonder if he's not a little bit of a 2021 version, 2022 free agent version of Hunter Henry, where it's like, yeah, he's good, but is he really super difference making? I think he probably is. The question that I have is just the lack of volume. It just gives me caution, and I don't have a great answer on that one. And tight end's a position where that just doesn't happen, right? It just doesn't. You don't just flip a switch, automatically integrate tight end in the next offense. Like, that's a really tough thing to do. And part of the concern that I have with him. So I think he's a good player, but I have some concerns. I think he's a potential buy candidate. Again, how do you buy? Do you go? Do you move up the position from Higbee to him? I think that makes some sense. Hunter Henry to him. I had that debate about the in a trade this past week, and ultimately I didn't pull the trigger because it was the plus was too much. But I wonder how different they are in terms of their expectations. That's a key concern that I have, just because when you look at it, some of the numbers this shouldn't be happening, but Dallas Goedert is 7.6 expected points per game. That's 21st at the position. That shouldn't be right, just given all his yards per route run and that sort of stuff. He's just not playing enough. So I'm not exactly sure why that is. When you look, and even if you go back the past 4 games or so, so we'll just go back to week 7 when you have that's the time that Ertz was that's been gone. He's 4th on the team in routes at 76. Devonta Smith has 98. Jack Stahl has played 27. Right? And he's been the highest graded during that time. He's been the highest graded PFF grade in terms of the skill position, the pass catchers. 2.8 yards per route run. He has just obliterated opposing defenses in that time. And they just want to play him as the 4th most valuable guy in the offense. And that just gives me a little bit of pause, because either they're totally irrational or they're know something that we don't and we should be cautious about. So that's my shtick there on Philly and my reason for concern with Goddard. Devonta Smith's proven pretty well. He's on the wide receiver three track in terms of expectation. 1.82 yards per route run on the season. So definitely on the positive success track. Quez Watkins is performing just behind Jalen Reagor in terms of routes. 254 for Quez Watkins, 272 for Reagor. 1.61 yards per route run for Watkins, 0.63 for Reagor. So a robust difference there for the two of them. When you look at the San Francisco 49ers, the next team up, Deebo Samuel is an absolute elite wide receiver at this point, which is wild. 8.4 ADOT, absolutely smashingly got this one wrong. Just totally missed. And it's a big improvement on ADOT, yards per route run. I think the lesson, if there's going to be a Deebo Samuel, what did we miss paradigm? Right, how do we miss a guy that's going to go up and be top three wide receiver in points per game to the first half of the season? What did we miss? I remember going back and my take on Brandon Ayuk was a wide receiver who does that as a rookie doesn't get displaced by someone that has, basically a essentially a zero ADOT. Like, that just isn't what happens. But the problem with Deebo Samuel that I could never, it's one of those like squares. I couldn't square the circle, right? I just couldn't figure out putting the pieces together. The thing I just could not make sense of was how Deebo Samuel had such a low ADOT, yet at the same time was a top 10 all-time yards per route run guy. I just couldn't figure out how he was managing to pull that off. Why were those two things both true? And essentially something had to give. And the thing that had to give was the ADOT. Because you just can't keep someone that is that good, that productive, running that poor amount of an offense. I think that's what we learned. So I think Rondale Moore will continue to watch this, but could find himself similarly situated. It becomes basically, if the person's this good, they got to get better. Doesn't always work that way. Brandon Ayuk, for example, but that's the story with Samuel, that he was at such an elite yards per route run level, like top 10% all time amongst qualifiers, which he had basically just qualified for. But that's one where when that sort of happens again, I think that's a paradigm that we'll have to see, and that's a pattern we're watching. So, okay, well that's San Francisco, and then we will highlight here. Kittle is at 12.5 expected points. He's 13.5 points per game. That's just standard PPR again. So top four at the position again. He's missed some time. Relatively even splits across the board. No major disparity between points or anything like that. Touchdown variance things or anything like that. All right, Seattle, both guys, your Tyler Lockett and your DK Metcalf, massive overperformers in terms of efficiencies. Again, this is you get to the spot with some of these guys, and it's just a really, do you want to, like, how do you sort of value a guy that continuously is this much better? By the way, Deebo Samuel, it's worth noting, the best, the most over expectation receiver of all wide receivers. So he's at 5.7 points per game over expectation. So, and to put that a fine point on that, that's basically like almost three quarters of a win over expectation. It's just a remarkable performance there. Okay, DK Metcalf is sixth at the position in terms of over expectation. He is expected for 13.3 points per game, and that is right in the wide receiver 2-3 type fringe. So he's at wide receiver 28. By the way, just think about this. Him and Amari Cooper, the same expected points per game, 13.3. Just think about some of the differences in the way that they are valued and thought of. again, you're talking about variance. 8 touchdowns for DK Metcalf, expected for 4. Danger, danger, danger. And we've seen this story before. We've seen the story where halfway through the season, he's over expectation in terms of touchdowns. Everyone sort of relies on it, and it turns out he's not that valuable, or not that he's not immune from your regression stats. That's part of the big thing. When you look, he is wide receiver 16 on the season. Wide receiver 14 at 16.7 points per game on the season. So that is the, he's overperforming, and he's coming from such a low level this year. And part of that's probably the pass flow of the offense with some of the volume stuff, as well as some of the lack of rust stuff. So we'll watch there going forward. All right, Tyler Lockett, and you have, he is at wide receiver 29 in terms of points. Again, some of that I think is rust related. He's at 13.5 points. He has 12.5 points expected per game. And again, he's overperforming it. It's down from years past, given the fact that, again, this is no Russell Wilson offense. Geno Smith, while good in his performance, wasn't quite the same level as Russ. And it's 34, wide receiver 34, tied with Jerry Jeudy in expected points for Lockett. So hopeful there in terms of some progression, and we'll have to see sort of where he goes going forward. Looking next towards the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and this team is interesting in the sense of how many high-end performers you could possibly support. Well, one way to support them is they don't play all the games. So you got the lack of Antonio Brown here. He's basically 5 games so far in the season. They've had their bye. So he's 5 for 9 in terms of playing. He is 4th in terms of points per game, so 19.1. When you look at receptions, 29, so basically just short of 6 receptions per game. He's over expectation, so he's expected for 15.4 points, which would put him essentially in the wide receiver 2 range, land of the position there, at 6 wide receiver 16. Next up here is Mike Evans. He's played all 9. He's expected for 14.7 points. That's good for 20th at the position. So, again, firm Mike Evans territory. Overperforming at 17.3 points per game. Right in the wide receiver 1 range of the position. Wide receiver 11. It's like almost like you could set your clock to him and Brandon Cooks being in that range of the position. Shocking and surprising, we know. When you look at Chris Godwin, he is similarly overperforming expectation, and I think he's one that's interesting from a how are we going to value him type perspective. He's actually the best in terms of expected points, so 16.4. he's played 9 games. He is 1.3 points over expectation, so he's at 17.7 in terms of his points per game. That is good for wide receiver 8 in terms of points per game. So let's do that again. Antonio Brown, wide receiver 4. Chris Godwin, wide receiver 8. Mike Evans, wide receiver 11 in points per game. Just a mammoth performance there. Again, how they all sort of fit in when they're all back together, we shall see, and how that all looks. But like, they've done that with largely together. I mean, Antonio Brown, I think we're going to probably, like, we might get half a season from Antonio Brown. It looks like he's going to continue to miss some time. But a good chunk of that sample was with the 3 of them. Again, it's not with Gronkowski, so that might be the question of, like, once Gronkowski comes back, it might be a little bit more difficult. But yeah, ultimately, pretty optimistic here. Again, I wonder if this is the last dance for these guys, if they can afford all of them going forward. That'll be a situation to watch. But as of right now, 3 dominant wide receivers on that team. We're awaiting Gronkowski, who's top 5 at the position in terms of expected points, actual points. He's got 2 yards per route run, which is just smashing. 2.82 yards per route run for Antonio Brown, and then 2 for Rob Gronkowski. Smashing successes there. All right, last but not least for the NFC, this is a longer, more lengthy version. Lots of stories to talk about in the NFC here. The last one here, again, with Washington, 9 targets per game out of Terry McLaurin. Just robust volume. That's excellent. 1.81 yards per route run. Again, check all the boxes with a backup quarterback. Like, it's a really, really darn good. And so I'm pretty excited about him. I actually traded Zeke for him straight up. I probably could have done a little bit more, maybe a little bit better after this past game, but I wanted to get I'm in the process of rebuilding, and I wanted to sort of get myself a couple longer term assets at the wide receiver position, uses frankly assets, because I can pivot off of a guy like McLaurin, I think, a little bit easier than I can pivot off a guy like Zeke. So take the asset. In hindsight, I wish I'd done it a little bit different, but we got it. And I think Terry McLaurin's like as safe as can be. He's essentially this version of Allen Robinson. Him and DJ Moore have basically proven to be quarterback proof. So really good there. We're on the watch for Logan Thomas coming back. Ricky Seals-Jones has been like a discounted version of Logan Thomas, 1.04 yards per route run. Like, remember, Logan Thomas like just went league leader in terms of routes run last year at the tight end position. On, you know, some basically his sort of lackluster production is at 1.14 yards per route run. So we're getting basically, you know, a 10% reduction on that from Ricky Seals-Jones this year. And you know, we'll ultimately see where, you know, what the split between the two of those guys is when they come back. I would expect Logan Thomas to regain his job, but Ricky Seals-Jones, and deep in leagues maybe that are deeper than your safe leagues, for example, like your 28 man, you might think about keeping him, but at that depth, I'm probably going to cut him and let him walk back. All right, well, that'll do it for an extended NFC version. Be on the lookout for AFC. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.